Hello and welcome to Cannabis Nation, where we help guide you through the wonderful and complex world of cannabis by shedding light on your most burning questions and dankest desires. We're your hosts. I'm Nick.
And I'm Susan.
And this is episode 37.
Woo-hoo!
State of the Union 2024. We're going to give you guys an update on the federal legal landscape and what's to come soon. But first, let's give a little round of applause for some new states that have joined the world of legal cannabis. Most recently, we have Minnesota, Delaware, and Ohio added to the group in 2023, making the total number of states with full legalization 24.
Wow.
And 16 states with medical cannabis, not counting states with CBD only.
We're almost halfway there.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. For full legalization, which is crazy. Coming up the slate, most likely we have Wisconsin, Hawaii, Florida, and South Dakota to become our newest legal states. They've had multiple attempts, and the ever-growing support from citizens and politicians, it just keeps adding to those votes and making it more and more likely. So we will probably see at least a couple of those legalized this year at some point.
Yeah, and speaking of citizens and politicians alike, mainly politicians, did you know that we have a Congressional Cannabis Caucus?
A Congressional Cannabis Caucus?
A Congressional Cannabis Caucus.
Now, Susan, what in the world is that?
Okay, now, a caucus is a group of like-minded congressmen who, like, say you want to advocate for something like cannabis, where you're a group of like-minded people and you develop a caucus, and then people are added to the caucus.
Okay.
Unlike a congressional committee is like the housework for Congress, and they're elected and appointed by other congressional members.
Okay.
These committees are not elected by other
this is just a group of congress people that get together and say, hey, we're all for this.
Right.
Let's talk about strategy and how we can get this going.
Yes.
Let's go drum up support with other representatives.
Yes, exactly.
Let's do that kind of stuff.
And they do meet together. So they do, there are procedural things where we're going to meet together and we're going to discuss this. And then we're going to, okay, let's spearhead this act or this motion. And let's go see if we can get other members to get on board. Okay,
Totally. Go.
And that's what they do.
All right. Okay. So who's in this cannabis caucus?
Now, first on the list, we have our chairman, and that's Earl Blumenauer, and who's from a Democrat from Oregon. He is the Eastside Portland, Oregon's representative and is retiring next year.
That's, okay.
Yeah. This man is on a billion different congressional caucuses and assigned to the House Ways and Means Committee. Okay. The aforementioned committee was established in 1865 and exercises jurisdiction over revenue and related issues such as tariffs, trade agreements, and the bonded debt of the United States.
So a lot of money.
Yes.
Wow.
So, yeah, revenue related aspects of the Social Security system, Medicare, and social services programs have come within the Ways and Means purview. And so, as you can see, very influential person.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you don't just get that being a junior member by
it's
any means.
It's unfortunate that he's retiring next year.
Yeah,
that's a powerful person to have on the cannabis caucus.
Yeah, especially the chairman. Now, just a little side note about him. He's an avid cyclist, and he's also founder and co-chair of the Congressional Bike Caucus. And I thought that was kind of cute. And just as a side note, he is a man after my own heart. Each year, in the weeks leading up to Christmas, he bakes and delivers hundreds of fruitcake to his colleagues on the Hill. As Nick will tell you, I bake cookies and pass out jam to everybody pretty much on my list. So
the fruitcake is a bold statement, though, I gotta say, because you know, I mean, I don't know if there's any other holiday dish that's more renownedly hated,
reviled.
Yeah, absolutely, it's a joke.
But if it's done well, we all want it. So, you
I
know,
don't know if I've had a fruitcake, period.
I do. I'll tell you, there was a family member who, my mom's friend, and he had an aunt, and everybody lined up for this woman's fruitcake.
She just had it.
She had the recipe down. So I just will say, like you said, very bold, but if he does it every year, that must mean that they like it. I think the only thing that would be better is if he delivered that on a unicycle through the halls of Congress. Anyway.
He's on the bike caucus, not the unicycle caucus. Come on. Let's stay on two wheels here, folks. It's not going to get crazy.
That'd be great. Okay, and now for the co-chairs. Again, just amazing humans. Barbara Lee, she's the Democrat from California and a former... Listen, she's a Black Panther Wonder Woman who was the only representative to vote against the authorization in 2001, which was a legislative knee-jerk response to the 9/11 attacks. Okay. This authorization granted the president the authority to use necessary and appropriate force against those whom he deemed planned, authorized, committed, or aided the September 11 attacks, or who harbored... said person or who harbored said persons or groups. It was Barbara Lee who has consistently criticized it since for being a blank check given to the government, which gives it unlimited powers to wage war without debate. Like, we don't even have to vote. Congress doesn't have to vote anymore. That's just because of this act. The president can just say, those people over there, get them. Right.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
She thought that, and I agree with her, that that is a legislative slippery slope into dictatorship.
Yes. That's crazy that she was the only one
to
vote.
The only one. And she was a former Black Panther, too. Well, she worked with them. Legislation Lee has introduced includes the state's Medical Marijuana Property Rights Protection Act, the Veterans Medical Marijuana Safe Harbor Act, the Restraining Excessive Federal Enforcement and Regulations of Cannabis, or the Reefer Act. I love that. And the Realizing Equitable and Sustainable Participation in Emerging Cannabis Trades and Realizing, it's the Respect Resolution. Let me say this again. Restraining Excessive Federal Enforcement and Regulations of Cannabis Reefer Act and the Realizing Equitable and Sustainable Participation in Emerging Cannabis Trades Respect Resolution. That was it. Excuse me. Lee was in a
bit of a mouthful. Yeah. You know, I mean, they really have to add a lot of words when they really want to get that acronym down.
I know. I was just going
to
say.
If you notice the first three, it's like they don't even try to make an acronym out of it because it doesn't say anything. But they're like, how can we get it to say reefer?
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be hilarious? Yeah.
And how can we get it to say respect?
Yeah.
With a little nod to Aretha Franklin. Okay. Lee was an original composer of the Ending Federal Marijuana Prohibition Act when it was first introduced in 2011.
Nice.
Yeah. And then in January 2019, she was named co-chair of the Congressional Cannabis Caucus.
All right. Okay.
Now, this next guy I'm going to tell you about, Brian Mast, he's a Republican from Florida, and he's a co-chair of the Congressional of the Cannabis Caucus. And a tour to force to be reckoned with for sure. He is in his fourth term representing the 21st Congressional District of Florida and the co-chair of the Congressional Cannabis Caucus. Prior to his election in Congress, Brian served in the U.S. Army for more than 12 years, earning medals including the Bronze Star Medal, the Army Commendation Medal for Valor, the Purple Heart Medal, the Defense Meritorious Service Medal? Meritorious? Did I say that right?
Probably.
Okay. While deployed in Afghanistan...
No, Meritorious.
Meritorious, thank you, Service Medal. While deployed in Afghanistan, he worked as a bomb disposal expert underneath the Elite Joint Specials Operation Command. The last improvised explosive device that he found resulted in catastrophic injuries, which included the loss of both of his legs. Please, you guys, do check out his profile pics, okay? He literally struts upright down the halls of Congress. He's got two prosthetic legs, so nothing stops this man. A true champion, he is also one of the few pro-cannabis Republicans and one of only five House representatives to vote for the Moore Act, which we'll be discussing later.
Yeah, I mean, there's a massive amount of respect for this guy. Yeah. It's one thing, to how you feel about what the military does and stuff like that.
Yeah.
However, this guy definitely dedicated himself to protecting people.
Yeah.
You know, he's bomb disposal.
Yeah,
He's literally devoted his life to protecting people. Knowing lost that his legs
yeah.
for it.
Knowing he could
die. Any moment. And then on top of that is you look at his platform, and he's clearly a one of the people who doesn't just vote on party lines.
Right.
You know, like, sure, he has some things that I disagree with. However, he's one of the few, pro-gun reform Republicans. He's for cannabis.
Right.
Even the things that I don't agree with, he comes at it from a pretty no-nonsense kind of perspective.
Right.
And is not just voting based on what is being screamed by the far right at the time.
I love that.
So, I got respect for the guy for sure.
The guy who actually, like, tries to represent his constituents.
Yeah.
And what they might want.
Yeah.
Wow.
Totally.
What a novel thing. So, still serving his country.
Mm-hmm.
Gotta love that.
And now, protecting people.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, for our next, David Joyce, he's also a Republican. He's from Ohio. He's our elder fair-haired hero representing the land just east of Cleveland, Rock's Hall of Fame homeland. And he is no joke. A former Ohioan public defender turned prosecutor turned congressman, which is, wow, it's a lot of coins to be flipping. He is appointed to a long list of committees, some of them the most influential and powerful ones in the entire congressional body, okay?
Wow.
A couple of those would be Appropriations Committee, which only regulates expenditures of money by the government of the United States, and the Ethics Committee, which has three main functions. And I wanted to tell you guys about this. It might seem boring, but this is who some of these people are. They're just not a bunch of, you know, wing nuts.
Yeah.
Okay, these are serious people.
Yeah.
So the Ethics Committee has three main functions. First, the Office of Advice and Education is designed to answer questions and provide ethics training to the House members, officers, and employees. So it's kind of like if there's any procedure or policy questions, these are the people.
Mm-hmm.
The second function of the committee is charged with investigating and adjudicating any alleged violation of the House rules or any related statutes by House members, officers, or employees. So, you know, like, they're the principal's office.
Mm-hmm.
And then the third function is reviewing financial disclosure statements filed by members, candidates, staff, senior staff, and shared staff. So that's like any kind of questions that come up about, you know, what did you do with all that money for that,
yeah,
you know, for your political campaign, that kind of thing, or insider trading kind of debacles. That's that's the Ethics Committee. Mm-hmm. All right. So not a bunch of, like I said, wing nuts. Now, no. You would think with all the congressional powerhouse support and advocacy that we get, you know, some of these new and old cannabis bills could be pushed through, you know, the legislative hoops of all the House halls and finally signed into law by our super supposed executor in chief, President Biden, for some reason, who's decided he loves cannabis.
But also is not keeping up on any promises.
No.
Not that we should expect any politician to, apparently, these days.
Apparently.
But yeah, no, it has been a bit of a disappointment,
I should say.
Well, here's a few of some of the new bills introduced to the legislation last year by a largely bipartisan group of congressional members.
Yes, bipartisan.
Yeah, lots of probably those people in that committee had a lot to do with these ones. But we'll start with the Strengthening the 10th Amendment through Entrusting States Act, or the States Act.
Yeah.
Because that is the acronym for it, believe it or not. So this one protects state-level marijuana legalization laws and allows for the interstate commerce of cannabis products between legal states.
Mm-hmm.
So this would be a really cool one, just opening up for being able to kind of regulate the market as a whole.
Yes.
instead of having every state be an island.
Yes,
you know?
Exactly what it is, too.
So this act was introduced on December 7th, 2023, as a revised version of the Strengthening the 10th Amendment Through Entrusting States Act.
Yes.
AKA States Act. I'm just going to say that from now on. As its name implies, the bill seeks to bring U.S. marijuana policy more in line with the 10th Amendment. Now, what is the 10th Amendment?
That is the 10th Amendment. That's the what I was 10th just going to ask.
Amendment is, it is the 10th Amendment to the Constitution and was ratified on December 15th, 1791. So
yeah.
It's been around for a while.
Yeah.
It makes clear that any powers that are not specifically given to the federal government nor withheld from the states are reserved to those respective states or to the people at large.
Right. So meaning if it doesn't say in the Constitution specifically this is the purview of the federal, government.
And that it's not the purview of the states.
It goes to the states.
Yeah. So right. Basically states' rights. Right. Is that's what the 10th Amendment is.
Yes.
So just so we are clear, an amendment is a formal revision or addition to the U.S. Constitution.
Yes.
As per Article 5 of the Constitution, it requires the approval of 3/4 of the states to be ratified. So why do we have to strengthen something that the combined legislative bodies have already agreed to formally and or amend the Constitution?
Right.
The Supreme Court is why.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I mean, I feel like that's being said a lot right now.
I know.
In general,
that's why
you
I'm
know,
laughing.
The Supreme Court is not that they're ever not in the news, but man, there is a lot of dirt there
yes.
right now.
Yes.
Which, I mean, it makes sense.
Unelected body, by the way, mm-hmm. by you and I. Those, again, yep. are appointed by the
lifetime appointments.
Yeah, by a president with yeah. congressional oversight. You know, yeah. they get to vote whether they can or not, but.
They might as well be royalty.
Might as well be royalty.
They might as well be kings and queens up there because yeah. that is, I mean, bloodline versus presidential support.
Right.
You know?
Right.
The Supreme Court has jurisprudence on all laws that make up the Constitution, meaning they define what those laws mean and how they relate to the particular case brought before them and their ultimate ruling. And it seems that there is some inconsistencies with those rulings, even when citing the exact same law, a.k.a. the 10th Amendment.
Right.
It's a good example of how the tone of the Supreme Court can change.
Yeah.
At times, the court has stated that the 10th Amendment lacks substantive constitutional content and does not operate as a limitation upon the powers express or implied, delegated to the national government.
Mm-hmm.
At other times, the court has found affirmative federalism limitations in the amendment invalidating federal statutes.
Right.
Proving once again, it does matter who the president is, and as that person is the ultimate contributor to who sits on the Supreme Court.
Right. Okay. So I just want to add this to the reason why we have a 10th Amendment when I was reading about it was because during like our whole revolution when we were breaking away, becoming a nation and breaking away from the British, that the people that we were having a hard time getting everybody on board for the Constitution because they were afraid that we were just going to elect another monarchy. So
exactly.
In their infinite wisdom, our founding fathers said, hey, guys, don't worry. We're going to make amendments to this.
Yeah, you can change it. It's not yeah. it's not final.
Right, right. And we're going to make those states things equitable so we're not right. So
totally.
We're not under just a federal martial law at all times.
Yeah.
So that's why the 10th Amendment and that's why it changes with how we, the people, feel about certain things.
Totally.
Right. Which the Constitution was written to do that, which is one of the reasons it's such a fantastic piece of work, in my opinion. So,
mm-hmm.
but with that being said, you know, about the Supreme Court, here we go again, because now we're going to get into some legislation work again. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So here's some things that are being, another one that's being enacted is the States Reform Act. In its current incarnation, and yes, there have been many, as we've just discussed with very,
with a lot of these. Yeah.
Yeah. This act federally decriminalizes cannabis and fully defers to state powers over prohibition and commercial regulation, a lot like what he was just saying. It includes amendments to relevant statutes to ensure that cannabis products are treated like alcohol by amended statutes in the line with Title II of the Act.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So there, here we go. We're picking apart a certain thing. We want to change this certain thing. Let's vote to change that certain thing is what this bill, what this is saying.
Yeah. I mean, okay. that's, I feel like this one is like the one we truly want.
Right.
You know, this one is really what most of us have been saying is that we need to take it out of the Controlled Substance Act altogether.
Yeah, altogether.
Yeah, let's get rid of that.
All right. So here's a quote from our Fearless Cannabis Caucus co-chair, fourth term Florida Republican Congressman Brian Mast.
Woo!
Purple Heart guy. The Constitution never says the word cannabis, but it does say clearly that all powers not explicitly given to the federal government remain with the states, said co-chair of the Congressional Cannabis mm-hmm. Caucus. Cannabis policy should be based on that. 50 states should be able to set 50 different policies that are going to be best for their constituents, and that's exactly what the States Act will do, end quote.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that's the States Act. And now, dun, 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 the one everybody's been talking about.
Yep.
The Marijuana Opportunity Reinvestment and Expungement, or MORE Act.
Nice.
Right? This bill decriminalizes marijuana, periodly. Specifically, what Nick was just saying, it removes mm-hmm. marijuana from the list of scheduled substances under the Controlled Substance Act and eliminates criminal penalties for any individual who manufactures, distributes, or possesses marijuana.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now this is a quote from David Joyce, who's also on the Cannabis Caucus Committee. Excuse me, caucus. The current federal approach to cannabis policy infringes on the rights of states to implement their own laws, stifling critical medical research, hurting legitimate businesses, and diverting vital law enforcement resources needed elsewhere. Okay, so that's kind of the other thing, too, is like, you know, how much money are we going to spend on this, guys? It's not the will of the people anymore. And we need other law enforcement to do other things, right?
Yeah, 100%. As well as just, you know, I mean, we're creating second class businesses.
Yes, we are.
You know,
wow,
I mean,
well put, Nick.
Yeah.
Very well put.
Where it's, you know, both illegal and legal and doesn't have the all the rights of other businesses out there.
That's right. It, even in taxes, but we'll get into that. Okay. So now Congress has... Okay, wait, I'm sorry. Republican leadership seems to have no plans to allow the Democratic-led legislation bill to advance, though. Legalization mm-hmm. bill to advance. Speaker Kevin McCarthy, Republican from California, has backed certain cannabis banking and research legislation, but he has voted against the MORE Act when it comes on the floor, when it came on the floor last in Congress. He voted against it.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a revised MORE Act. So.
Yeah.
Now, now, here's what's important for us to all know, okay? Because I think people get confused about this.
Totally.
Okay, so Congress has the authority to federally legalize cannabis and remove it from the Controlled Substance Act
mm-hmm.
in the legislative branch, okay?
Yeah.
But as we know, the Senate has so far failed to act in any way to reform any cannabis legislation past or present, okay?
Totally.
But there's another path. And this is what the hubbub is as well, because mm-hmm. I think people get the MORE Act confused what we just recently found out about the DEA and the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Yeah.
So the DEA has the final authority to reschedule cannabis via the executive branch. It doesn't need the Congress.
No.
Okay.
Absolutely.
So those are the two. I want to make clear to everybody, these are two different conversations. There's a legislative path and there's this other path.
Mm-hmm.
So Nick, tell them what that is.
Let's talk about rescheduling.
Yeah.
So the idea is to move cannabis from the Schedule 1, which it describes it as a drug with high potential for abuse and no medicinal use. To Schedule 3, which is defined as drugs with a moderate to low potential for physical and psychological dependence.
Uh-huh.
meaning it's a much safer drug to use.
Right.
It also has potential for medicinal properties. It would be, if it was moved to Schedule 3, it would be alongside products containing less than 90 milligrams of codeine, ketamine, anabolic steroids, and testosterone. So that'd be the, you know.
I'm sorry.
It's quite a group. Quite a group to be
in. We got
in.
A hormone in the house. Anyway. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Seriously. The U.S. Department of Health and Human Services determined that cannabis has recognized medical value following conducting an eight-factor analysis and recommended to the DEA that the plant be reclassified from Schedule 1 to Schedule 3 drug under the CSA.
Right.
So that's the whole reason people are really talking about this idea is
right.
because I believe the Department of Health and Human Services a few years ago was instructed by President Biden to look into it.
Yes. Because President Biden wants to have this legal, he wants to be able to say he legalized cannabis, which I think is kind of ironic.
Totally.
So he would like to get this done before this election year, but that doesn't look like it's going to happen.
No, no. And but, he's also still a little timid to just, you know, pull the trigger on go, okay, executive order.
Right.
You know, change the shit.
For sure.
So, you know, he wants it to be done through normal pathways, but that's going to be the absolute slowest way.
Can I just say this, that if he was going to be a one-term president,
mm-hmm.
he would have the balls to do it this year. But because he's getting trying to be reelected to president again, he now is taking his
he's softening up.
Yeah.
Because he wants to, you know, have as many people vote for him as he can.
That's
and
right.
if people are against weed,
yeah.
but they still want to vote for him, he doesn't want to alienate them.
That's correct.
So, the Department of Health and Human Services had recommended to the DEA to reschedule it to Schedule 3.
Right.
In December 2023, acting chief of the DEA's Office of Congressional Affairs, Michael Miller, wrote a letter to Earl Blumenauer, the representative from Oregon. Also, he's the head of the caucus,
That's
right?
right.
Stating that the DEA is conducting its review of the HHS rescheduling recommendation and has yet to offer further details into this review.
Yes.
If the DEA proposes a rule to reschedule, a 6-day public participation period for comment would follow. During this time, the DEA would also likely entertain requests for public hearings.
Yes.
Now, after that 60 days, the DEA has to write a final rule that must mm-hmm. be published in the Federal Register for 30 days
yes.
before the rescheduling rule becomes effective.
Right. And that's the pathway.
Mm-hmm, exactly. So
right.
so a few periods to get through.
Right.
But roughly 90 days, you know, after they decided they were going to do it, it could be possible.
Right.
So the politicians involved are Senator Elizabeth Warren, a Democrat from Massachusetts, and 11 other senators as well had sent a letter to the DEA Administrator Ann Milgram and head of Department of Justice Attorney General Merrick Garland.
Yeah.
The letter urges the DEA not to reschedule cannabis, but instead completely deschedule cannabis
yes.
from the CSA entirely.
Correct.
Which, that's the MORE Act. That's also right. That other one that we read. Was that the States Act? States
mm-hmm.
Act.
Yes.
So they just wanted, you know, what we want as well.
Right.
They're just trying to push it completely off the CSA, which is really what's needed.
And let me just say this too, that it sounded like all the things that we were saying kind of when we were talking about what Bill's introducing, that we were repeating ourselves, but we are repeating ourselves because these acts are redundant.
Yeah.
Because there are some things in them that they know that people won't vote for,
yep.
but so they change the verbiage and try a different type of act to see mm-hmm. like, okay, can we change the verbiage and maybe move it this way? So it's not that we got it confused, guys. It's these, some of these things are redundant
totally
in
are.
The bills themselves.
Totally are. You know, they'll have, you know, while they both consist of descheduling cannabis completely, you know, there's so much that gets shoved into these bills. You know, they're never just a one-trick pony.
Right.
So they throw around a few different options, mixes of things to add into it to see what kind of support they might garner.
Bingo. Okay.
But the senators also requested that Milgram and Garland respond to 6 questions by February 12th to, quote, help the American people understand what steps the DEA is taking to act on HHS's rescheduling recommendation, end quote.
Yeah. And then as of Valentine's Day, that February 13th, they still hadn't gotten an answer. And I think the reason that they wrote this letter was just say, hey, where are you guys in this? And they tried to say it in a fancy way, you know, with 6 questions. And the DEA pretty much said, you're going to be alone on Valentine's Day.
Yep. Yeah.
No chocolate, no flowers, no card.
The DEA returned the card that said, will you go out with me? Circle the answer and yes, no at the bottom. There was no circle.
There's no circle.
Yep.
Yeah.
So on the flip side, more than a dozen House and state Republicans sent a letter to the head of the DEA last week urging the agency to, quote, reject the HHS analysis and keep marijuana in Schedule 1.
Right.
They argued that any decision to reschedule cannabis should, quote, be based on proven facts and science, not popular opinion, changes in state laws, or the preferred policy of an administration.
And that was a specific jab, I think, to Joe Biden right there.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy because if you look at the facts and science, it's proven. But so you're asking for something. Usually you guys hate facts and science.
Yeah.
That makes sense why you don't realize that what the science says.
Right. Because it's not popular.
Yeah.
I have that opinion as a Republican.
Yeah. So the question is, what would it look like if cannabis was rescheduled?
Yes.
So one major change would be that it would eliminate the burden of the IRS code 280E, which if you're in the industry, you know what that is. If not, we have talked about on this podcast, but a brief overview is that it requires cannabis businesses to only be able to write off the cost of goods sold as far as what they write off for their taxes, which is much less than any regular business, which pushes, at least in Washington state with all in taxes included, up to an effective like 60 to 70% tax rate.
Right.
It's absolutely insane.
And like Nick was saying, making us second-class businesses.
Yeah, that definitely was what we were referencing. And, you know, between not being able to use standard banking and the tax code that we have to pay under, it definitely gives us less freedom than any other type of business out there.
Facts.
However, this would allow state legal cannabis businesses to take credits or deductions other than those for cost of goods sold.
Right.
So it would all of a sudden mean that there was a lot more revenue coming into or profit coming into the cannabis industry, which would allow much more growth. It would allow better quality in product and experience. Would really go a huge step to legitimize the current cannabis industry.
And just to make clear, when we say that we can only write off cost of goods, you go, well, what else can you write off as a business? Well, there's a lot of things that you can write off as a business that we can't. Employee wages, things like that.
There's, you know, yeah, exactly. Any business cost can be written off taxes.
Right.
But
we can. Just the cost of goods.
Yep, exactly. Okay. So it would also make it legal for cannabis to be prescribed instead of just recommended by doctors, which would have a huge benefit for employees' rights. And insurance would pay for a portion of the medicine, which would be a huge benefit to medical patients, for sure.
Yeah.
But that would also mean that any products that could be prescribed would have to be FDA approved, which is a lengthy, expensive, and limiting process as far as what types of products would be allowed to be prescribed.
Yes.
You would not be having loose leaf cannabis prescribed to you because that is an inconsistent product.
Fact.
It's never going to have the same amount of CBD, same amount of THC, same amount of terpenes. So that wouldn't be allowed. It would be extracts only. And in deemed safe consumption methods and safe levels.
Right.
So It would
with certain milligram dosage and blah 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 blah. Yeah,
which would, you know, almost 100% limit the actual efficacy of what makes the cannabis plant work.
Right.
But it would also still be illegal in the eyes of the federal government for recreational use, as well as any businesses producing cannabis that are not FDA-approved products.
Right.
So the recreational industry as a whole, as well as all recreational consumption, would still be illegal. You would, according to the federal government, it would be only legal to be prescribed by a doctor and given an FDA-approved cannabis medicine.
Right. Train.
Choo-choo.
Rolling down the track of legalization.
You know, and, you know, I think it's just a nice natural ambiance. You know, just a quiet train in the background. Let's, you know, we're real people and not, you know, in a room 50 feet underground with no windows.
I come out of my hole to talk to you guys.
Yeah, we're not part of the podcast farm.
Now,
where was I? Okay, so it would still be illegal for the legal cannabis businesses and recreational use today. It would legalize interstate commerce and the mailing of medication.
Right.
For once again those FDA approved products. And while it would be a step in the right direction, it wouldn't change much for recreational cannabis users and businesses in the states that have legalized. Yeah. And in the ones that haven't, people would still be going to jail for recreational use.
Right.
So, excuse me. A Band-Aid on the hole in the wall. There is a lot of good legislation that's out there right now that you know, we're very hopeful for.
Right.
Unfortunately, with what we've seen in recent years with the MORE Act, with the SAFE Act, and with many of these other bills proposed, is we're seeing them just bounce around and bounce around and bounce around and never actually make it anywhere of serious consequence.
Right.
Maybe one gets a little bit more further than the previous one, but then it just dies somewhere.
Yeah.
So while we're hopeful, we're also, you know, not...
We're pessimistic.
We're a little pessimistic. We're a little pessimistic.
Realist. People who are realists get confused with pessimists. Being pessimistic all the time, but I'm not a pessimist, you know, I'm a realist. And so I just like to say that knowing the Congress and doing the reading and the research in the years that Nick and I have been on this podcast, where it has shown me that you can have really good legislation written by some really smart, well-appointed people. Yeah. No nonsense people, and it still just languishes on the floor. And then you'll have this like wartime thing that we were talking about, where one of our representatives here, she was the only person in the House to vote against it because she saw it as a blank check for the government to wage war.
Yeah.
You would think that would be more than one person who would stop that, and you would think that with this Banking Act at least would have passed because everybody makes money.
Yeah.
Republican, Democrat, Independent, doesn't matter who you are. So that was interesting to me how the wheels of justice can sometimes go too fast.
Yeah.
And then how sometimes it's just on purpose goes slow. And it's supposed to. So.
Well, and, you know, also, you know, we are... At least from somebody who's inside it right now, seemingly at one of the most polarizing places in American history of politics. Yeah. You know, there is such a strong divide and there is so much party line voting without any second thought of it.
Yeah.
Where it comes to the point where, you know, one party is voting no on something just because the other party brought it forward.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's going to slow down any product or any progress whatsoever for anything that has been deemed as one political side is for it and the other's against
it,
at least even hinted at, you know. So it's a really difficult place to be in, especially, you know, we're lucky that cannabis has a lot of bipartisan support and that cannabis caucus is both Democrats and Republicans.
Yeah.
You know, that's a great place to start from, you know, but until it's taken serious on a national front and the recognition of how many people are actually for this, how much hurt and pain it's going to stop and how much money there is in it.
Yes.
You know, we need them to get their heads out of their asses and realize that this is a slam dunk for all of them.
All of us.
This is it. There's no, you know, you might have some teetotalers that are like, you know, that are against it, but you have the support of the majority of the Americans right now.
And I will tell you, one of the big drivers of this whole, you know, DEA and the Human Health Services Department was the veterans. The veterans have a huge, they have a huge presence, and they have band together saying, we want this, we need this, this will help us on so many different levels, physically, psychologically. You know, there's mental trauma and things that, you know, people, this cannabis has been found to help with PTSD and things like that. So they have been one of the driving forces in that. And I don't know a Democrat or Republican or independent who couldn't get behind that.
Yeah.
Right. So once again, the state of the union is that we are a country divided, and something as simple as just making it easier for cannabis to that we can take credit cards and debit cards. Just a simple act like that has languished in the House because of this political divide that we're in.
Yeah.
So the State of the Union, for me, I would like us to see come together. I don't know if you guys watch the State of the Union. I know it bores a lot of people, but what really was disheartening for me is in years past, there have been things where the whole House claps when the president says something that everybody can get behind, like, you know, protect our children or, you know, help our troops. But this last time, there was no across the aisle applause. There was heckling. And I was just disheartened. So,
well, it's because when a, when, you know, to the ears of a Republican, when a Democrat says protect our children, they're saying, oh, you're going to take away my guns.
Take away my guns. That's exact. Yeah, that's exactly right.
And there
right.
are many ways vice versa that that works as well, you know, so it's.
Yeah. And a lot of times when other, you know, Democrat congressmen hear, you know, we need to protect our troops, you know, it's like, well, we do need to protect our troops, but how much money have we got now? How, you know, and I think that there's some congressional, I mean, all parties think that the military, I think, has a big big budget and that we could do some consolidating about that, but nobody will do that. Nobody will do that.
Yeah, because it's anti-American.
It's anti-American.
If you're trying to get rid of, you're trying to weaken America, if you're trying to reduce the budget for the military.
Right, that's in the trillions of dollars.
Exactly, and... You know, they've run multiple audits and they cannot account for where their money's going.
No, but, you know, but God dang it, we're not gonna have congressional oversight on some of that.
I don't
want to
be seen as un-American.
No. So again, you know, again, guys, I know there's a lot of a hoorah about not voting and how your vote doesn't really count. But I think that Nick and I have pointed out in just this episode alone on many different factors and reasons why it does count. Okay. Right down to who your representative is and in East Side Portland to the president who's appointing these Supreme Court justices who have these life appointed, you know, jobs for God's
sake. And you know what? I mean, I think that that is really the most legitimate place that we can make a difference is with local representatives, because what, you know, both the House and the Senate, these are filled with local representatives that you have a, your vote really does count
really
for and
does.
Counts so much more for.
Yes.
And, you know, like we were talking about with some of the members in the caucus, like the most important thing that all of us can do, Republican, Democrat, or whatever, is make sure that the person that you are voting for isn't just gonna follow whatever the party head says, and that they actually think for themselves and they listen to what their constituents say and they vote accordingly, because those are the kind of people that will actually create change in the future.
And don't underestimate the power of people sending letters. Lots of things have been done when groups of people get together and send letters. I just recently heard, and I could, this might be wrong, but that's how Scientology actually became a religion.
Yeah.
Is because they...
And also legal threats, basically. They have a strong litigation team.
But they all got together and hounded their congressional representatives and just sent letter after letter after letter after letter. And that's mm-hmm. how they made it. Okay, you guys get to be a religion.
Yeah.
So again, yeah, so it does matter.
Yeah. Have a cult-like fervor yeah. when talking to your representatives.
Yes, and that should be the state of our cannabis nation, mm-hmm. a cult-like fervor to move forward the initiatives that we would like to see. Go get them, team!
Oh, my goodness, that is perfect.
Well, thank you for listening to Cannabis Nation. We hope this has helped shed light on your most burning questions and dankest desires. Check us out on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at Cannabis Nation Podcast. This is Susan.
And this is Nick.
Ending on a high note. I'm so excited. We're going to start doing our cannabis reviews.
Tune in next time.